penance to tell him about certain good morals and good qualities and righteous virtues that an individual should have. Now, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, he listed quite a few different moral virtues and ethical virtues that an individual should have. In one place of this conversation, we find that when talking about good morals, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam tells the companion that good morals includes this one thing, and that is that from among the signs of one's love is their much agreeing and their little disagreeing. Now, of course, it's such a beautiful statement, and there's so many different things that can be spoken about just this one statement of Imam Jawad alayhi salam. Sometimes we really wish that the world could listen to the true voice of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, so that they could hear the prescription to solving the problems of this world. And truly, as Muslims and as Shias, we believe from the depth of our heart and soul that the only solution to the world's problem is Islam, and the only solution to the world's problem is the Holy Quran, and of course, the only solution to the world's problem is the Sirah and the Sunnah, the manners, the behaviors, the teachings, and the wisdom of the Messenger of Allah and the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. Now, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam, of course, he responds to this question in this dialogue with his companion regarding good morals by saying that one of the signs of love is that one agrees quite a bit and that one disagrees not so much. Now, this, of course, as I said, is so much that can be spoken of because there's intricacies that are within this statement that really, have a lot to be spoken about. Now, when Imam is talking about, of course, one of the signs of love, yes, this is true. You tend to agree with the other person. Now, this agreeing with the other person does not mean to agree with them in things that are haram, prohibited, to agree with them in things that are not allowed, such as lies or slander or backbiting or gossip. This is to agree quite a bit, in things that, of course, are not haram, but in things that are not so fundamental where you have to take a step. So for example, your friend says, let's go to this park. You agree instead of saying, no, I want to go to the park that I want to go to. Let's go for a walk. And no, I want to go in the car. Or, let's go and, to the library and read a book together. No, I don't want to go to the library. I want to go somewhere else. You see, so the more you disagree, it seems like the less you love the other person. But the more you agree on these things, right, as we said, with these kind of intricacies that are involved, and you have to be careful because you can't agree on haram things. Your friend says, let's go to the club. You can't, Imam Jawad said, let's agree, so I'll go with you to the club. No. And this is what we have to be very careful from, because a lot of times people will take the statements of the imams and they will try to come up with their own meanings. But you have to put the different teachings of the imams, alayhim as-salam, themselves and the Holy Quran in order to understand the complete picture that is being portrayed by the divinely appointed imams, in this case, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam. Now, of course, the little disagreeing, of course, goes in hand with the agreeing, right? When you do love somebody, you don't want to constantly disagree with them. You don't want to constantly contradict them. You don't want to constantly get in their way of everything that they're saying. But of course, just as we had talked about agreeing, here we have to give a caveat to disagreeing. That doesn't mean that we should stop disagreeing when the other person is going to do something which is bad, or wants you to do something which is bad, wants you to do something which is haram, prohibited, not allowed in Islam. So of course, if they say that let's go to the masjid, then of course you should agree. And on the other hand, if they say let's go to the disco, of course you should disagree. So everything with its own intricacies and within the framework of Islam. And again, this is true, that among the signs of love is that one agrees quite a bit with the other person and one disagrees little bit with the other person. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam. Thank you.
And now we invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ayub Rashid.
Respected brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So when we look at the madhab of Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, then you can understand that innama amruhu idha arada shay'an an yaqula lahu kun fayakun. People may go against the madhab. People may decide to fight against the madhab. People may stop the spread of the madhab. People may decide to block the means of the madhab of Ahlul Bayt not to reach other people. But Allah has decided that this madhab will reach all the corners of the world and people will come to understand the madhab of Ahlul Bayt. Can you imagine that Ma'mun was against Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam? But it was the same Ma'mun who brought Imam Al-Jawad in his assembly where he can talk with the cream of the people, scholars and each and everyone. And can you now imagine about the media that, how big it was for people to come to know about the personality, the power, the knowledge, the piety of Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah and God bless you all.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked as پیغمبر اعظم
نمونه. The holy prophet of Islam is the example
of عمل انسان بعد از ایمان.
Self purification is the most significant factor.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned. In the Holy Quran, Surah An-Nisa, Ayah 32, we read, "Do not covet the advantage which Allah has given some of you over others. To men belongs a share of what they have earned, and to women a share of what they have earned. And ask Allah for His bounty. Indeed, Allah has knowledge of all things."
توصیه میخوام بکنم خواهرای بزرگوار برادرای گرامی زنان جامعه ما دو تا دارایی دارن.
I have a piece of advice for you dear brothers and sisters. The women of the society have two important belongings, one of which is private and the other one is public. The place of these two belongings must not be changed. The private belonging of a woman is her beauty and body, whereas her public belonging is her chastity, honor and modesty. Now, the private belonging belongs to her husband, and the public belonging is for the stranger people in the society. These two belongings must not be changed in a woman's life. In better words, woman must not act like a stranger to her husband, and not like a familiar person to the stranger man of the society. The Muslim women, too, must be aware of this important point. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about our program on Call of Islam page, IRIB English Radio, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
in the limelight.
Scientists continue to raise alarm about the intertwined climate and biodiversity crises, warning that Western countries are losing the ability to lead as they break climate commitments. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times noted, talking in high profile while dragging the feet, such contradictory actions are not sustainable when it comes to dealing with climate change. Only reasonable deeds can be pushed forward in a sustainable way, and only countries with the ability to lead can set an example as pioneers. Unfortunately, the West is losing such ability. According to a Guardian report, the UK will build its first new coal mine in 3 decades at Whitehaven in Cumbria, northwest England. The new mine will take 2 years to build and will produce an estimated 2.8 tons of coking coal a year, which is used in the production of steel. Burning a pound of coal emits 2.7 pounds of carbon dioxide. The UK government seems to be forgetting about the climate commitments it has made in the past. At last year's COP26 climate change conference in the UK's Glasgow, the UK set the goal of accelerating the phase-out of coal. In 2019, it committed to reaching net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said in his speech at this year's COP27 last month that Britain is morally right to honour its climate change commitments. In June, the UK's climate change watchdog warned that the plan to build a coal mine in Cumbria is absolutely indefensible because the resulting pollution would blow holes through the nation's pledge to reduce emissions by 2050. In similar moves, France has rebooted a coal-fired power station to secure the country's electricity supply over the winter. A hard coal-fired power plant in Germany is also back in operation due to the gas supply crisis. While in the US, the Supreme Court ruled in July to limit the Environmental Protection Agency's ability to resist and restrict greenhouse gas emissions from power plants, a significant setback for climate action. Against the backdrop of the Russia-Ukraine crisis, Western countries broke the energy supply demand balance with Russia, not only dragging themselves into an energy crisis, but also pulling the whole world to bear the consequences. When these old brand capitalist countries put their narrow interest above the country's long-term interest and the common interest of humanity, this overshadows the efforts in coping with climate change by the world, especially developing countries. Climate change is one of the most important agendas facing humanity. It requires the cooperation of all countries and should transcend geopolitics. But the experiences in the past decades show that in Western countries, climate change actions are subject to their foreign political and economic objectives. This means the West will only talk high, but act low, and be strict with others while loose with itself. This is what hypocrisy entails. For a long time, Western countries have used climate change and carbon emissions as political tools. Behind the climate agenda is a set of geopolitical tools crafted by Western countries to suppress developing countries. They label themselves as a pioneer in coping with climate change, while using climate change as an excuse to block development of developing countries so that they can't continue to enjoy the benefits they once exploited. Be bossy as always and retain their discourse power and dominant position in the international system. The West has not paid back historical debts, and now it is owing more. Shen Yi, a professor from Fudan University, told the Global Times that Western countries took the lead in completing industrialization while emitting carbon dioxide recklessly, and they have an obligation to help developing countries reduce carbon emissions. However, Western regimes not only transferred their industries to developing countries to enjoy the high quality and cheap products from developing countries, but at the same time required developing countries to pay for carbon emissions. This is sacrificing some people's interest to realize others' governance model. For the West, emission reduction is not a rigid task, and it is just normal to sacrifice long-term goals for current political objectives. Xiu Liang, an associate professor at the School of International Relations of Beijing International Studies University, believes that Western regimes such as the UK should explain and apologize to the international community because they delay the global process of tackling climate change. But the question is, do these countries have the will to bear international responsibilities? For them, international responsibility is just a false proposition. Meanwhile, the website of Common Dreams noted, with a global biodiversity summit underway in Montreal, Guardian columnist George Monbiot recently took aim at the U.S. for its active and deadly cavalier attitude toward the rest of the world. An example, other nations follow. Although U.S. President Joe Biden recently appointed Monica Medina as the first special envoy for biodiversity and water resources, and his administration is participating in the 15th Conference of the Parties, COP15 of the Convention on Biological Diversity, CBD, the U.S. is notably not a party to the treaty, which was drafted in 1992. In fact, the U.S. is the only United Nations member state not to ratify the treaty. The other 192 UN countries, the European Union, Cook Islands, New and Palestine are also parties to the CBD, leaving the U.S. in the company of just the Holy See, the government of the Roman Catholic Church.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me Sheikh Javed. Well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javed.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Topic that we are going to delve into today or in the upcoming episodes probably is Nazr, and that's what we are going to do according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we continue our program, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching Makassas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid, according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. The topic that we are talking about is Islamic Laws about vows or Nazr. Sheikh Javed, you know, if an individual makes a vow or a pledge that will spend, he will spend or she will spend some money in the name of, for example, one of the infallibles, Lady Fatima, peace be upon her, or the, one of the imams, peace be upon them all, is it permissible to spend the amount, the same amount to which the vow was attached, on any charitable work or any good deed in name of those people in which you have made the vow about?
Oh, that's good. Well, it is permissible to spend the money or the thing donated or about which the Nazr has been made in the name of the Infallibles, peace be upon them, on any charitable act or any charitable work or any good deeds. Let's say, using the money to hold a mourning ceremony or a commemorative ceremony on the occasion of the martyrdom of, let's say, Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, so the money can be spent on any good deeds, because he did not specify. He said that, okay, I'm going to give some money in the name of Lady Fatima Zahra salamullah alayha, and then, okay, the money is not cannot be given to the lady herself, but okay, the money should be spent on good and charitable activities, like, for example, good deeds, any good deed, like one of the good deeds that can be, on which money can be, the donated money can be spent, is holding ceremonies and majalis on the occasion of the martyrdom of one of the infallible imams, of course.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, another question, Sheikh Shawid, is that can an individual make a vow to do something which he or she is not capable of performing it?
Oh, that's a good question. A person can make a vow only for an act which is possible for him to fulfill or to comply with. He has the power to do it.
Right.
If, for example, a person is not capable of traveling, let's say, to Karbala, and he makes a vow that he will walk from, let's say, from India to Karbala, okay, something which he a normal individual cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
So this vow is not binding. It's not valid, because such a person cannot walk 2,000 or 3,000 kilometers from India or Pakistan all the way to Karbala. So mm-hmm. the vow is not valid in the first place.
Yes. Okay. Sheikh Shawid, someone says, I have more than one vow, right?
Yes.
For example, let's say 10 vows on me to fulfill. And I don't know whether the formula recited, though at that time then, to make those vows was valid. What does he or she have to do to be relieved of his or her obligation?
Well, first of all, as I said in one of the previous episodes, the formula should contain the word Allah. And if he remembers that the formula he recited contained the word Allah, then he should go ahead and fulfill the vow. And in the event that he does not remember, or he has no idea whether he even recited the formula or not in the first place, then of course it's not obligatory for him to fulfill the vow and to do anything, because he has no idea, he's not sure whether he recited any formula or not. Then we can assume that he did not recite any formula. And there is a principle which we call the principle of istishab. So the principle of istishab, which is actually to presume the continuity of the something, indicates or suggests that individual is not under the obligation to fulfill, to do anything. Because we can say that in the past, Nazr was not obligatory, and now we doubt whether it is still obligatory on him or not, or it is obligatory in him upon him at all or not, then we conclude that it is not obligatory at this time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawbid, our guest speaker. Well, the topic that we are talking about is Nazr or vow. And Sheikh Tawbid, I want to ask you this question in this part of our program, Islamic Laws. If a person makes a vow that they will perform an unlawful or reprehensible act, or the other way around, if they refrain, they make a vow to refrain from a lawful or obligatory act as well as a recommended act, are their vows valid?
Well, it's a matter of +2 + 2 is equal to 4. The answer is very clear, because a person cannot make a vow promising or pledging to do to commit a haram act or to perform a makruh act, you know. And a person cannot make a vow also to refrain from, you know, a wajib or a mustahab act. So the thing is that such a vow is invalid in the first place. The act that you are going to perform, and or the vow that you must that you make, should include an act which has some preference according to Islamic Sharia. It's good to do, it's better to do, and then you make a vow that you will do it. In that case, the vow is valid. Otherwise, if it has no preference, and it is even haram or even makruh, or it is a kind of an act which involves refraining from something which is recommended, which is maybe wajib, so the vow cannot be valid in this case.
Mm-hmm. Sheikh Tawbid, what is the Islamic law, what is the Sharia law about an act that has an equal merit? If a vow is made to do such an act, is it obligatory, is it mandatory to perform the very act?
Okay, I understand from your question that equal merit means that it's something neither good nor bad.
Right.
It is 50-50, you know, it's in between. So if a person makes a vow that he will perform or abandon a normal act, for example, the performing or abandoning, you know, an act which is neither good to perform nor bad to perform, so it has equal merits in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So his vow is not in order, because as I said, there should be something good in it. It should have a preference. It should be preferable. Otherwise, the vow is not valid. So if performing is better in some respect, and a person makes a vow to do it, to fulfill it, then it's okay. It's permissible. For example, if a person makes a vow that he will eat a certain kind of food so as to gain strength for worshiping Allah, for remaining vigilant, for rendering services to the people,
right,
his vow will be in order, because praying, worshiping is good, and he has made a vow to eat food so as to remain strong. That's good.
Mm-hmm, I see.
And let's say I give another example. If a person makes a vow that he will renounce, okay, and renouncing an act is good in some respect, and for example, if he finds smoking is harmful, and he makes a vow that not to smoke, his vow is in order, because smoking is harmful. And even if it is not harmful, it is very much likely that smoking can, can endanger someone's life or risk his health. So renouncing is good. And of course, if a person makes a vow to renounce smoking, then it is the vow is valid.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Tawbid. Thank you very much, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. From me and the rest of the team here, in this radio. We say wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun Maljaa ilaha illahu Ghaffarun Jameelun Wahhabun Latifun Tawwabun Samiun Basir
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
As-salamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi ardi.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
Kul subhan wa
رفعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي.
Ali's name inscripted on the gate of heaven and the wings of Gabriel. Jabir ibn Abdullah has reported the Holy Prophet as having said, 2,000 years before the creation of heavens and the earth, there was an inscription on the gate of heaven reading, Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and Ali ibn Abi Talib is his brother. There is a hadith in Manaqib in which the Holy Prophet has been quoted as saying, Gabriel came to me while he had spread his two wings. On one wing there was the inscription, There's no God but Allah, Muhammad is his messenger. And on the other wing there was the inscription, There's no God but Allah, Ali is Muhammad's successor. In Musnad of Ibn Hanbal, the Holy Prophet has been quoted by Jabir as having said, Before the creation of the heavens and the earth, the following inscription was on the gate of paradise. Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and Ali is the brother of the messenger of Allah.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's a blessing to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. In the traditions of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find this concept of the heart. Now, in many traditions, we find that the heart is considered the place where Allah resides. And we also find that the heart is the place where the love for Allah exists. Now, we find, again, in the traditions and in the Holy Quran in general, that we must protect this heart. And of course, when it comes to the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find this perfect heart, this heart which has reached a kamal, a perfection, a completion, a completeness, which leads towards ultimate perfection. Now, this heart, again, it must be protected. Imam Ali alayhi salam, when talking about this heart, he says that if despair, hopelessness, al-yas, overtakes the heart, successive regrets will kill it, and the anger of the heart will be intensified. And so here, dear brothers, we find that this is the truth, right? Well, one of the greatest sins, and of course in the book Greater Sins by Ayatollah Dastaghayb Shirazi, we find that he speaks about despair being one of the greater sins. Now, despairing in the mercy of Allah, despairing in the help of Allah, despairing in the victory of Allah. So in general, it means that we believe or we imagine that the troubles and tribulations and problems and hardships that we face in life are so great that even Allah either can't help us or He won't help us. And in both cases, we end up despairing from the help of Allah, the victory of Allah, the mercy of Allah, the forgiveness of Allah. Now, when this despair overtakes our heart, Imam Ali says, successive regrets will kill it. Right? So the first step in this road towards destruction and ruin and depression and anguish and anger and frustration and regret and all these negative emotions, the first step is despair. We cannot save ourselves. Allah will not save us. Allah cannot save us. Allah will not forgive us. Allah will not find us a solution to our problems. And what happens is that then successive regrets come. Well, why didn't Allah help me? Allah should have helped me. This didn't happen. That didn't happen. This didn't get accomplished. That didn't get accomplished. This negative regret continuously, because it stems upon despair, starts to kill the heart. And eventually, the heart becomes so filled with despair and regret over the past and even perhaps the present that it is overwhelmed with anger, and anger is a constant companion for a human being. And it's not really a companion. More than a companion, it's a constant torment for a human being. For as it is also related in the traditions, the anger hurts the individual themselves more than it hurts anybody else. And so, in order to protect this heart and make sure that it remains the abode of the Almighty Allah and that the love for Allah increases one way or the other, as Imam Ali says, do not let despair overtake your heart. Do not let successive regrets kill your heart. And of course, do not inflame and ruin your heart via anger. Another profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program. And at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma inna qulubal mukhbitin ilayka walaha.
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits a supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
Look at people ask about imamat. He says, this imamat is so important. Wilayah of Ali ibn Abi Talib is so important. How come Allah did not mention this in the Quran? You'll find there's a logic behind it. That if Allah were to mention Imam Ali's name, naturally you and I will not give the importance to Rasulullah the way he deserves it. Because if the name is mentioned, then the later person who succeeds after the messenger will become more important to you and I. And Allah says that's not the design. The design is Rasulullah. You will get all your rules and who the successor is from the Prophet. If you go anything further, you will negate your center axis. And the center axis is Rasulullah. That's why Allah doesn't mention his name. Now people might say, but isn't this an important subject? I mean, let's face it, it's very, very important. The fact that Imamat and Khilafah would have solved a lot of these problems in the world, that Karbala would not probably have taken place, and Imam Ali alayhi salam probably would not have been having this kind of a problem. Let me ask you, in Islam, what is one of the pillars in Islam? Is it not Salah? Salah, prayer. Imam Hussein alayhi salam loses half his army in the battle of Karbala. In the middle of the battle, he loses half his army by doing Salatul Khawf. You might say, why? You've got such 72 warriors. Why not save it and fight these enemies and lodge them to hell? Why would you lose half your army? The Imam says, what are we fighting for? This Muawiyah and his group, they want to stop Salah. They want to kill Salah. They want to infiltrate the wrong religion. We are there to protect it. We came for Salah, not for our power and for our authority. We came to protect Salah. They say every messenger, a Jew comes and asks around, he says, who's the one who saw and witnessed the last death? The last death of your messenger. People pointed to Imam Ali. He said, this man. They come to Imam Ali and he's asking, did you witness his death? He said, yes. He said, what was the last sentence he uttered before he died? And Imam Ali said, As-salah, as-salah. And the Jew says, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa anna Muhammad Rasulullah.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.